How's it going? You've been seeing Nelly Korda do that over and over again for 6 holes now.
It's just satisfying. The way she hits the ball is just satisfying. It's pretty awesome.
Have you picked up anything, learned anything from her?
Unfortunately, no. I've watched and she's been amazing, but golf's hard. Hard to replicate that fast, but no, she's been incredible and she's really cool too. And somebody I've been watching and following for a while now, so it's fun to be out here and get to see an up-close look at how she does things. Just so smooth and really good at what she does.
Mm-hmm. You got the chance to spend some time with Annika mm-hmm. yesterday.
Yeah.
As a kid, I know you grew up playing golf. When did you become aware of who Annika is?
Oh gosh, I've known for a while. I think from the standpoint of understanding the impact that she's had, not only on golf, but women's sports in general. Played in a men's tournament, it's pretty incredible. Just like one of those trailblazers and, you know, challenges herself every single day, but also just like the joy that she exudes and the way she treats people, like the short time that I've got to spend with her, you can just feel that. And I think that's what's really incredible. And now how much she gives back and gets to do things like this, it's fun for me to be a little part of it. And obviously this is my first time meeting her, so it's super cool to do that too.
And speaking of giving back, Gainbridge is really passionate about parity and closing that pay gap for women and girls through sport. Why is that something that you're very passionate about as well?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that I get to be a partner with Gainbridge, a brand that really, you know, puts their money where their mouth is and really supports and loves it. And they've supported my foundation and just a big supporter of women's sports in general, whether it's golf, whether it's basketball, whatever it is. So I feel very fortunate. And obviously, women's sports is on the rise, you know.
Yeah.
It's only the beginning. So it's only going to get better and better. And, you know, I've been a fan my whole life, so it's cool for it to be where it is now, but I know it can go even better places.
Who put a golf club in your hand? Oh, there's a drain.
Yeah, careful.
Tom Fako, he's on top of things. Who put a golf club in your hand for the first time? Who taught you the game?
My dad. I loved it. My dad played a little bit growing up, and then I remember one of my birthdays, I asked for golf clubs, and I got this, like, cute little pink set. It was probably from, who knows, like, just the store up the street and a cheap plastic, not plastic, but pretty cheap pair. I had them for a while. They were cute. And then eventually got some nice clubs and, you know, I really love it. I love being outside. I love being with my friends. We make it competitive. We're all kind of hacks.
But aren't we all?
We still find a way to make it competitive, of course, because that's what we do. But, you know, it's a fun way to spend the afternoon or the morning, whatever it is, with your family and your friends. So that's what I love about it.
What's the competition like? Are we betting? Is it teams?
It's not even betting. It's just bragging rights so we can talk crap to each other. In college, we had managers that were mostly all boys, and so we'd like go and play versus them, and it'd be like me and one of my teammates versus two of them, and we'd go like play Twilight every day after practice, and it would just be so fun, and we'd go talk about it, talk crap the next day at practice. That's what made it so fun.
I heard yesterday you said that your bucket list course is Pebble. Why Pebble?
Million.
You have a million, but you named that one specifically.
That's just what came to my head, but it's so pretty. It's probably a bad choice because of how windy it can get there.
Sure. It gives you an excuse, though.
That's true. I like that. That's a good point. I like how you're thinking.
Thank you. Thank you.
But it's just beautiful. I mean, hey, I'm not going to turn down any golf course that's pretty. Like, I'm open to really anything, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is the Golf Channel, so I think that we could probably help set that up. Not that you need us. Before I let you go, I got to ask you a basketball question.
That's
I know that you work really hard in the off season. You said yesterday you're always trying to get better. Mm-hmm. What's the thing that you're working on in this off season?
I think, honestly, besides the actual basketball skill part of it, I think getting stronger, that's what I'm focusing on. I'm in the weight room a lot, just building that strength. Obviously, it was hard going right from the college season to the professional season. You don't get to spend a lot of time in the weight room, so that's what I've tried to focus on the most here. And then obviously a lot of things on the court. I'm always wanting to get better, and that's kind of what drives me, and I love it. I love getting to do it, and I feel very fortunate that it's my job.
This is kind of the first time you've ever really had an off season. What has it been like to have this much time off as an adult?
It's nice, but at the same time, I'm still so busy. I gotta get things done that I haven't been able to do during basketball season, so everybody thinks I have a bunch of free time, but I've been busy, I've been doing stuff. I like to keep myself in a routine of working out and whatever it is, so it's been a lot of fun, and I've enjoyed it.
Here's a look at the Race to Dubai rankings. You see Rory McIlroy strengthened his position at the top, thanks to his tie for third on Sunday in Abu Dhabi, commanding lead going into this final event of the season. Rory is seeking his sixth career Race to Dubai title, which would tie him with Seve Ballesteros on the all-time list and move him to just two behind Colin Montgomerie, who holds the record with 8 Order of Merit titles. Rory spoke to the media earlier today in Dubai and gave his assessment of his season.
Yeah, incredibly consistent again. You know, I think I've been really proud of that over the last few years. But then at the same time, you know, thinking about the ones that got away, you know, I should be sitting up here with a 5th major title, and I'm not. So that, you know, that stings, and that's something that, you know, I've had to come to terms with. But at the same time, you know, I've got plenty more opportunities in the future. But I've really just tried to focus on the positives of this year, of, you know, consistently performing at the highest level. You know, still having 3 wins with an opportunity to get a 4th here this week, you know, to win another Race to Dubai title. You know, did I achieve every goal I set myself this year? Probably not, but I still consider it a successful season. You know, you've got 2 guys at the top of the world rankings, Xander winning 2 majors, you know, Scotty winning a Masters and a Players, and, you know, the Olympics. You know, they certainly separated themselves from the pack this year, and I'm obviously very aware of that, and, you know, only makes me more motivated to, you know, to try to emulate what they did this year.
If you were dishing out grades, what would you give yourself?
It would be a pass. It wouldn't be pass with flying colors, but probably a B.
I suppose that's a sign of the standards that Rory McIlroy sets himself, that a year in which he won 3 times, starting in Dubai earlier in the year, and then he won, obviously, the Truist at Quail Hollow and the Zurich with Shane Lowry, and yet it's a B. That's a career year for a lot of people. But I suppose it's just tantamount to the fact that metrics that he is judged by now are major championships. It's the metric he judges himself by.
And I think that's fair. And look, he's always going to be the toughest on himself. We've seen that throughout the course of his entire career, where you would look at that season and ask yourself, that if that's a B, I'm never getting a passing grade going forward. But when it comes to Rory and his expectations, and certainly you can see the sting of Pinehurst is still there. You and I are going to talk about it. He's going to hear about it for a long time. I would be curious, the first time we see him next season, wherever that might be, ask him the same question, because my guess is he's probably become a little bit easier on himself. He has a tendency to put things in perspective the further he gets from him. But yeah, I think when you talk about Rory, it's the major championships that matter.
And he did mention the near misses there, the ones that got away. And there were quite a few of them when you think back on it. Obviously, the Irish Open got away from him at the end, the Olympics got away from him, the US Open got away from him. Wentworth, Billy Horschel, obviously made that bomb in the playoff for an eagle to beat him. So there was a lot of disappointment in this year for Rory McIlroy as well. But I mean, I had a conversation with him once where I remember he said, if you set the bar low, you'll never be disappointed. So he's obviously setting a bar high enough where disappointment comes with the territory. And he's got a lot of disappointment this year. And that's been the case over the last couple of years. You can go back even to, say, LACC for the US Open last year. You go back to St. Andrews in 2022 and the Open that got away from him there. There's a lot of disappointment. At a certain point, you can see the frustration coming out in him as well. And I think that's something he's really going to have to reconcile before he starts a new campaign next year, because that's the nature of this sport. You get knocked down, you get up, and you move on to the next one.
Now, as someone who carries notebooks for a living, I don't think anyone has a better relationship with Rory than you do. Do you believe that he sets the bar low, or was that just him?
Oh, no, he said he was actually talking about me setting the bar low for myself, but he doesn't set a bar low for himself. I think he sets a bar so high that he's invariably going to disappoint himself, because it's a bar that mortals just generally don't reach. I mean, I can't imagine that Scotty Scheffler sets a bar for himself pretty low every year as well. None of these guys do. That's what drives them, and certainly what drives Rory McIlroy. Even with 3 wins, it's still just a B for him.
And I think we had this conversation last week about some of the things he worked on in those 3 weeks since his last start. I believe it was at the Dunhill, where locked himself in that lab, didn't look at the ball flight, tried to do something a little bit different. And I'm taken by the idea that I appreciate his constant search for success to get 1% better. That's what makes him Rory McIlroy. But that's not what held him back this year. I always contend that it was his short game and his putting that held him back more so than anything he did with his swing. But you can appreciate what he's doing.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot of us would like to lock ourselves in a dark room and not actually see where the ball flight is going.
Back on Golf Today, Caitlin Clark set numerous records in her college basketball career for the University of Iowa, including becoming the leading scorer in the history in Division I college basketball. That's both male and female, 3,951 points. She was the number one overall pick in the 2024 WNBA draft by the Indiana Fever and finished her rookie season by breaking multiple records and was named the 2024 WNBA Rookie of the Year. Brittany Lincecum was asked about Caitlin's impact on the Pro-Am at the Annika's.
Oh my gosh. I mean, just, I'm going to be honest, I've never watched women's basketball. And then to see her at the Final Four, we were in Vegas that week and I watched every minute of it. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like what she has done for women's sports and basketball, and to have her at our golf tournament, like, I mean, I'm in awe. I got a basketball. I'm hoping she signs it for my girls. But it's just really cool to see her coming out. I've seen her swing. I think she has a great swing and she has potential. So, but how cool for her to come out and support us this week and only help grow women's golf.
Check this out. Looks like Brittany Lincecum did in fact get her basketball signed for her daughters by Caitlin Clark. That's a better retirement gift than a gold watch, I think. Pretty cool moment for both. Afterwards, Nelly Korda talked about what it was like to play those nine holes this morning with Caitlin Clark. Game recognizes game.
You just played nine holes with the Caitlin Clark. Just tell us about the experience.
It was so amazing. She's so sweet, so nice. It was nice to kind of get to spend some time with her. We've messaged a little on Instagram beforehand, but to get to spend some time with her and to see the influence that she has on people, bringing people out here, and to see how amazing of an influence she is just for sports was really cool to see firsthand today.
What was the, this is obviously not her main sport.
Yeah.
maybe it's not fair to ask her takeaways of her game, but just putting herself out there the way she did, what was your impression of how she handled everything?
Yeah, it was great to see how relaxed she was. Obviously, you know, with the media attention that she has gotten probably in the past year and a half, 2 years, you can see how she's comfortable playing in front of a larger crowd. And she was just really enjoying it. You can tell, like, she's definitely very talented. She was picking the ball really clean up. She was losing a couple shots to the right, but, you know, I asked her how many times a week she plays, and I think the amount of obligations that she has, she probably gets to the golf course once a week, and to get to just play once a week, I mean, she was playing really well.
Did she ask you for any tips out there?
No, she did not. No. Nine holes is kind of iffy, you know. I'm still trying to, you know, kind of practice in a sense and put on the greens, and then on top of it, you know, chit-chatting with your other partners as well.
Austin joins us now, and Austin, I want to get to that Sunday finish in Mexico. What an incredible finish. Before we do that, Caitlin Clark is playing in a Pro-Am today on the LPGA Tour. Obviously, a lot of interest in that Pro-Am. Have you ever been in a situation on a Wednesday on the PGA Tour where you were maybe a little starstruck?
Yeah, I mean, it happens actually quite frequently. You know, we play with, you know, cool people all the time on those Wednesday Pro-Ams and ex-athletes or current athletes. And, you know, the most recent one I did last week at the WWT event in Cabo was Chris Progner, you know, NHL legend. So, it happens all the time. Maybe not a bigger name right now than Caitlin Clark, so that's really cool.
Going back to last weekend, Austin, the El Cardinal course at Diamante demands pretty low scoring. I'm curious, did you have to go out there Sunday with an aggressive mindset? Because even if you shoot 2-3 under par on that golf course, you're going to get passed by a lot of guys.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting golf course in the fact that you do have to go low, but there is mistakes to be made. You know, it's pretty wide off the tee, but if you do miss, it's, you know, you're taken unplayable and you're moving on. And it's a difficult second shot golf course, but I was aware that I was going to have to shoot low. I was thinking if I got to 22, 23 under par, I was going to win the golf tournament, but it ended up having to be more than that. So it's, you know, those guys played good down the stretch and it was a fun battle.
You said on Sunday that you weren't nervous during that final round. How many times did that happen on the PGA Tour? And in a situation like that, does it almost feel easy to you?
Yeah, I mean, the first time I won at the Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches, I was extremely nervous from start to finish. I think it's because I had the lead. It was a Monday finish. You know, it was just a completely different situation than I was in at down in Cabo. I was one back chasing to start, and you know, I just made some couple early birdies that just settled me right away. And you know, I think a lot of rounds on the PGA Tour I play that I'm not nervous. Just, you know, I might be nervous on the first tee ball if there's a ton of people around, or you know, but it's really when you're in that situation to win that you expect to be extremely nervous. And it was just interesting. I was just comfortable the whole round, and until I chunked the chip on 18, obviously. that got me going a little bit.
We've all been there, maybe not with as much pressure on the line. You mentioned the win at the Cognizant Classic at PGA National back in March, Austin. Mm-hmm. Did you feel pressure to back up that win, to prove that you're a guy who expects to be in that position frequently?
Yeah, I think that was a, you know, big bonus of winning this last week was, you know, it validated that I can win on the PGA Tour. You know, the first one, obviously, it proves you can win on the PGA Tour. It's special. It's incredible. But, you know, to do it a second time, it really just, you know, proves to me that, you know, I can do this, and, you know, I can, you know, go on to win plenty of these if, you know, if all things go well. But, yeah, so it's definitely just a huge validation for me.
As you just pointed out, two wins this season on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. Statistically, across the board, it seems to me you're doing everything about the same this year as you did last year. What's the difference getting those first two wins?
Yeah, statistically, I think, you know, it's about the exact same year. You know, I've put in a lot of work to improve areas where I've struggled in, and it hasn't quite, you know, came to fruition. But, you know, I think it is getting better in some areas. But it's been good to see that the ball striking hasn't taken, you know, a fall from all the work on the other areas of my golf game. So, I think it's that, I finished second last year, and I shot a bogey-free 600 par in the final round from the lead. And, you know, I think that kind of proved that I could win, but it's hard to do. And, you know, because I played so well in that final round. But, you know, it's just something about getting over that hump. Once you get over that hump, you know, you like to say the floodgates have opened and now you've done it and you can keep doing it. But, you know, we'll see.
How difficult is it to keep your focus on the job at hand over the closing nine holes, Austin? I mean, did it occur to you down at Diamante at the weekend that a victory, you're going back to the Masters? Or do you ever think about getting into signature events, top 50s, things like that as the season wears on?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think that was another nice thing for me whenever I did secure that first win, as my mind was wandering. And, you know, I was looking ahead and, you know, I was trying to get myself not to do that. But then I just kept doing it. And, you know, but then I kept hitting good shots. So then it occurred to me that, you know, I'm allowed to let my mind wander. You know, I can think about those good things. That's what's fun. And I was still able to, when it came down to the moment and hit the shot, I was able to lock back in. And so this weekend in Mexico, I let my mind wander. You know, I let myself think about, you know, playing the Masters again. And, you know, but then I'd get over, you know, the shot, or I'd talk to Stone, we'd start going through numbers, and, you know, I was totally moved on from what I was just thinking about and able to hit the shot I wanted to hit. And, you know, I think with that first win, I realized that I could do that. And I think that's important for me.
You said on Sunday that you won that championship with a new putter in your bag, and you said you switch pretty much every week. Do you really switch every week, and does that putter have any chance of staying in the bag for a prolonged period of time?
Yeah, I don't switch every week, but I do. I switch, but it's like a rotation of old putters. You know, I've got probably 5 to 10 putters that I'll just, you know, cycle in and out. And, you know, they're just – I have a bedroom that I've turned into a little putting room at the house. And, you know, I'll just walk in there and, oh, this one feels pretty good. And, you know, I'll take it on the trip with me. And, you know, and it's, then I end up playing it for 3 weeks straight and then I can't make a putt with it. So then I go back to the bedroom and grab a new one.
I've never heard a tour pro be more relatable than right now. Austin, thanks to your good play, you don't have to worry about things like field sizes or the number of fully exempt tour players are out there now, all the stuff the policy board's going to vote on Monday. Are you generally supportive of the changes that are happening, or do you have some kind of reservations about them?
You know, honestly, I don't have too much of an opinion on it. You know, this is my second year out here, and since I've turned professional, it's changed every year. You know, when I got on the Corn Ferry Tour, there was a 25 guys made it through the regular season, and 25 guys made it through it Corn Ferry Tour Finals, and then the year after that, it was completely different and just 30 spots. So, I mean, everything that, you know, how it was when I started has changed. So it's just, I'm used to the continuous change at this point. And, you know, I honestly, I don't have too much of an opinion on it. I think it'll be interesting the first year that they make those changes, because there's going to be 230 guys playing for 100 spots versus where, you know, after that first year, I think it'll be fine. You know, it's just less guys playing for less spots. But, you know, that first season, I could see it being, you know, pretty cutthroat and guys playing every event and trying to get their status.
Well, Austin, again, we really appreciate your time. And again, congratulations on the victory.
Thanks so much. Thanks, guys.